B. It was shaped like a teardrop shape, a drop of water. The front of it was the rounded part instead of the sharp point. And surrounding the slender part of it was struts and landing gear. Along the sloping sides of the teardrop shape were the exit ports for the thrust of the engines. D. The pointed end was toward the back. And there were no wings or anything? B. No. Their entrance and exit port was in the back. Somehow they had an energy field to shield it from radiation so they would enter and exit through the back, for they had loading ramps. D. Did the ship have many floors? B. Oh, yes. Many. Some floors, like the one used for gardening and such, was very high to accommodate the machinery they needed to support the plants. The living quarters were of regular size, but somewhat taller than your average story because they tended to be a taller race of people. They were taller and more slender, so their ceilings were somewhat higher to accommodate this. D. Then they had everything they could find in a city. Is that correct? B. That is correct. And they kept everything carefully balanced because it was an enclosed environment. D. Did they use light on the ships? B. Yes, to see and to function they used light that was similar to their sunlight. It would appear dimmer and reddish to you, like a lamp that's on half power with a light orange bulb in it instead of white. D. I was thinking that we use incandescent or fluorescent types. B. I observe that you have clock faces that glow in the dark due to an internal radiation source. That it doesn't have to have any power source, and it glows from chemical reaction. This was the type of lighting they had. It was lighting that would last for the origin of the old ones, 171, D, B, D, B, D, B, D, B, centuries simply because of the nature of the materials involved. Due to atomic or chemical reactions. They were glow panels located sometimes on the ceilings, sometimes on the walls, depending on how and where they were needed. And for specific works in the various places, like in the laboratories and such, there would be other types of light sources for the various functions. You have a similar light source that can function for years, but you've not made extensive use of it. You just use it for small things. Like for indicator panels and dials and such as that. Then what happened to bring their ship to our planet? This trip continued through different generations. It was in between the second and third generations when the ships were coming past this solar system. One of the ships had developed a malfunction and it had been gradually getting worse. I don't know if it was by accident or by sabotage. Do you think someone on the ship sabotaged it? Or possibly by someone before they left. Delayed action damage. I wonder if they might have done something like that to all the ships. I don't know. It is possible. They may have wanted to keep Thesapeep from succeeding. One cannot tell when it comes to political upheaval, or religious upheaval. People will do things in the name of whatever. They had been trying to repair it, but it continued to malfunction again, and became a little worse each time. By the time they got to this solar system, this one ship was just barely functioning. They were frantically trying to find a place to land so they could repair their ship. According to their standards, they considered the Earth to be marginally habitable because they considered the sun to be too bright and hot. But they thought that perhaps this one ship could make an emergency landing, and in the planet's conditions be able to repair the ship and then continue. They thought they could live there only under very careful conditions. Because the sun was too strong for them and had too much radiation. But they thought if they wore protective clothing in the daytime and did most of their activities at 172, the legend of Star Crash, nighttime, they would be able to land there long enough to repair their ship. While they were repairing, the other ships would orbit the Earth and send down help as it was needed, for they were wanting to all stay together. They thought there was strength in numbers. This ship, as it began to land, malfunctioned again and went out of control. By the time they regained control, it was too late. They were able to soften the blow of the crash, but the ship was then beyond repair. So the other ships had to leave them, because they felt they would not be able to live there. The radiation would kill them, or cause their crops not to grow. So the other ships went on towards their destination. I really cannot see where it was. and the survivors on this ship. There were several who were killed, but many of them survived, went ahead and made the best of it. Thinking, well, we were planning on being a colony anyhow. We'll go ahead and make this our colony D, even though it was not the conditions they wanted. B, right. And so they went ahead and set about building a colony. It was smaller than originally planned since it was only one ship instead of five. But they had everything they needed to be self-sufficient and to start their new lives. And so they did this and coped the best they could with what they considered to be harsh conditions. D. This must have been very difficult on them. B. Yes, but they lived. Chapter 15. Survival D. The legends said that the old ones had difficulty having children when they first came here. Did that have something to do with the crash? B. They healed from the effects of the crash, because those were short-term injuries. But the main problem was the sun. It was hotter, and the radiation band covered a different part of the spectrum. It was very different from the sun of their old planet. Theirs was a dimmer, cooler sun. Their planet was not quite as far away from the sun as Earth is from her sun, but instead of being a yellow-white star of medium size like our sun, it was a smaller, cooler star, more towards the red end of the spectrum. And so the radiation of their sunlight was different. The spectrum lines were totally different from this sun's emission lines. Incredibly, this statement regarding the temperature of the various stars in our galaxy is correct. It seems to be the opposite from what we are taught, but the coolest stars are red and the hottest are blue. Thus their sun was one of the cooler types, red, and Earth's sun is in the medium range as a yellow type. The temperatures change as one goes from one spectral class to another, and the color of the star appears to depend on its temperature. D. You said they also had a fascination with our moon. B. Yes. Although other planets in their system had moons, they were mostly small rocky ones that the mining companies were mining. Their home planet did not have a moon. The scientists 173-174, the legend of Star Crash, were fascinated that Earth had such a large moon in relation to the size of the planet. Because they had formulated theories, due to the observations in their home system, that this was not possible. They had theories based on the ratios of the moon's paths, the size of the moons and the mass of the moons in relation to the size and mass of the planet. And the moon of this Earth broke all those rules. They were fascinated to see that such a small planet could have such a large moon and the stress not affect them adversely. They did form a theory that the size of the moon was one reason why Earth has so much tectonic plate shifting and earthquakes and such. It was due to the stress from the moon, but they saw it was not anything drastic. It might shorten the life of the planet by a few million years in the long run, but not enough to affect life on the planet for several billion years to come. D. Was the Earth's gravity different from theirs? B. Earth gravity was slightly stronger, but it was not enough to really affect them. They felt tired because their muscles were not used to it. They discovered they were developing more bone problems like arthritis and such, because the gravity was a fraction stronger. But in a few generations they had adjusted to this. D. Being in an enclosed environment on the ship for so long might have made it harsher, too, whenever they landed on Earth and were exposed to the air and the sun. B. That is true, since it was during the third generation that they landed. Some of the first generation were still alive. They were very old and they remembered what it was like on a planet. They were able to help out some. But still, since it was totally new to their experience, the younger ones had to go through their individual adjustments to it. They had never seen open sky before in their lives. That was the biggest shock of all. The large horizons. They practically had agoraphobia, fear of open spaces, because they were used to enclosed spaces. D. You also said that they did most of their work at night and they stayed inside. Survival, 175. B. Yes, particularly the first few years they were here. They were trying to become acclimatized to things. At first they were just trying to adjust to the heaviest gravity, and the sun. And so they did most of their work at night when it was cooler. It made it easier to work with the extra weight. Meanwhile, they'd go out in the daytime some. But they were trying to figure out ways to adjust to the sun. The scientists were researching this, and they developed special sunscreens and such to help protect them from the radiation. They also wore protective clothing in the daytime. This was their white clothing that Yuan mentioned, which they started burying them in. D. The kind of shiny material. What did they normally wear? B. It's hard to say. They always had the protective clothing on. They had other materials underneath, not like what we have, but it was a flowing type of clothing that they wore during the night. D. You said that when they first began to have children, the genes were ejected? B. Yes, in the way that radiation normally affects genes. It was difficult and they mutated. It was quite a while before they were able to take the proper precautions. And they had to continue taking these precautions for several generations. D. What kind of precautions do you mean? B. Not to let a woman of childbearing age outside during daylight hours. When she became pregnant, to protect her in protective clothing at all times, day or night. To be very careful about the food she ate, and so forth. D. I believed you and said that some of the first babies were either born dead or were deformed in some way. B. Yes. And many of the deformities were so bad that they died because they could not live in that condition. D. That must have been very distressing for these people. You said they had ways of replenishing food while traveling on a ship. Did they carry animals? B. A few. They planned on making use of the animals that were native to the planet. But they knew they would need a few animals to start with. And so they mainly brought three different. 176. The Legend of Star Crush, D, B, D, B, D, B, animals. One animal was basically a food source. Another animal was a food source and a source for making cloth from its fur, and a third animal was basically a draft animal. They didn't carry many, just breeding stock, because it was difficult to maintain extra lives on the ship. I suppose that over that long length of time they would have bred until there would be too many on the ship. They had ways of restricting it through controlled breeding. Basically, they would just breed enough to replace the old stock that died, to keep the number constant until they could get to a planet. They planned to let them breed more numerously when they knew they were approaching a planet and it was proven to be habitable, so they would have more animals when they landed. And they would then carefully tend the animals until they bred into the safe number range. There was an animal that Duin called Oxen. Was that one of these? Yes. That was the draft animal. They were not true oxen as you know them, but that was the closest word he could find in your language to relate to the animals. They were used like oxen and they vaguely resembled them, in that they did not look like horses and they did not look like elephants. And they did not look like water buffalo, which are other draft animals on your planet. But they vaguely resembled oxen, so that was what he called them. They were built differently. He paused as though trying to think how to describe them. Their general framework, their skeletons, were different. Their joints were hinged somewhat differently, so they had a different gait. And their skull was shaped differently. Some of them had horns and some did not. It depended on the genetics. Their ears were set well back on the head and faced backward. The eyes tended to be gray in color and were set higher on the head than oxen's eyes. And the dentition, teeth, was different. I believe he said their horns went straight out to the sides. Is that correct? Yes. And they did not have cloven hooves. It appeared like bony toes, three in the back and four in the front. They were four. Survival, 177. D. B, D, B, D, B, D, B, toe-like appendages that were very bony and ended in miniature hooves on each toe. All this description was emphasized with appropriate hand motions, that would be different. But he said the Neva had many of the animals. That's true. The radiation of the sun made it difficult for them to propagate and many times the males tended to be sterile. So whenever there was a fertile male, he didn't have to do any work. He was very pampered and was used strictly for breeding. It was hypothesized that because the testicles were more exposed than the ovaries, they received a larger dose of radiation and hence tended to be sterile. And there was nothing they could interbreed with. No, their genes were too different from the other animals on Earth. If they could have found some true oxen, they could have developed so-called mules hybrids that would have been sterile but would have been able to function. They considered using caribou, but the bodily chemistries and structures were too different to develop viable crosses. You said there were two other types of animals that they carried. Did these survive after the crash?
One did, one did not. The one that did survive was an animal remarkably similar to the domesticated goat.
Was this the animal that you and Sasum Ion in the village took care of?
Yes.
They had lost the details of where it came from, so they assumed that it had been bred from the wild mountain goats, because there was a close similarity. But there were plenty of differences, too. They were considerably smaller than the mountain goats. They had a similar type of fur and bone structure, but the horns were different. They were not as big. The horns were more slender and just went back a little ways, much like your dairy goats. At first the scientists were able to interbreed the animals they brought with some mountain goats, for amazingly there was a viable cross. They did that to help acclimatize the animals to the planet and still keep the characteristics that they had been brought for. And so they went into a very, 178, the Legend of Star Crush, specialized selective breeding program. The other animal, which was brought mainly as a food source, did not survive. The animal had difficulty breeding and its offspring were usually deformed. And so it was decided that, since they had found the animals native to the planet were edible without any harm being done, they would go ahead and slaughter those animals they had brought and use them for that first winter.
D. They didn't really need the ones they had brought anyway.
B. Right. For they discovered that, although the sun was different, the bodily chemistries of the animals on the planet were not poisonous to them and they could receive nutrition from them.
D. Did the experimenter find these things out? Or did do tests of some sort?
B. They did tests.
D. You said the oxen died off. What about the goat animal? Did that survive to our times?
B. Yes. The goat ended up interbreeding with the mountain goats and it survived. But after so many generations of breeding, it cannot now be differentiated from the mountain goats. Perhaps scientists may consider it a different breed of mountain goat. And any irregularities that may be observed could be explained away as differences between breeds rather than between species. Basically, that's what it is today.
D. You talked about them bringing zits and things like that, too. Did any of those plants survive?
B. They have crossbred so much with plants that were already here that you really couldn't find them. One plant that is a possibility is what you call corn.
D. Corn? The Native Americans called it maize. Do you think this is directly descended from the seeds they brought?
B. Corn has also blended with native plants, but it has more predominant genes from the home planet than other earth plants.
D. I was wondering if there might be one plant that we could trace back to their seeds.
B. No, it was so long ago. Many ages.
D. What about the trees he spoke of? There were some thathad fruit.
Survival, 179.
B. Yes, one of them survived. It is known to you as persimmon.
D. Surprised, persimmon?
B. One of them. The persimmon that is found on this continent that is different from that found on the Asian continent. The other tree didn't survive, but was very similar to apricot. It didn't survive up there in that land because it had to be pampered, but the persimmon survived.
D. Then the persimmon would be something that could be directly traced back to them. And he talked about the plant they made their cloth from. Do you know which one that is?
B. That plant thrived here on Earth and it branched out into many different types of plants. It's difficult to say which one it was since there are so many plants that could be traced back to it.
D. I was thinking of flax, because I know flax has been used for thousands of years for the making of cloth.
B. Flax is one. Another adaptation of the plant is yucca or bear grass. There are many adaptations from the same plant.
D. Then they have just split off into different kinds. I'd like to know a little bit more about the first people who were there.
Tuan said there was a small group of people there whenever the ship crashed.
B. Yes. The natives. They were aborigine type people, distant ancestors to the American Indians.
On the chain of evolution they seem to be Stone Age people, in development between Neanderthal and Cro-Magnon humans. Although I do know Neanderthal and Cro-Magnon were not related directly in the line of evolution, so far as knowledge and cultural development. They wore skins and usually lived in caves or built shelters usually out of sticks and mud. D. They didn't have any form of agriculture? B. No, they were hunters and gatherers. They hunted for game, and as the appropriate time of the year came around they would gather whatever fruits and nuts that were growing wild. We were finally getting closer to dating the arrival of the Old Ones. Geologists state that there were four major advances of ice, 180. The legend of Star Crush, during the Ice Age, which included periods when the ice melted back. The last ice sheet disappeared from North America between 10 and 15,000 years ago. With the retreat of the ice many forms of animals became extinct, to be replaced by modern animals. The scientists say that it was during the last glacial period that humans first appeared on Earth. Earlier species of humanoids, such as Neanderthal man, is supposed to have existed in the last interglacial period. The modern species of humans developed during the last advance of the ice, or roughly 15,000 years ago, and with its retreat, 10,000 years ago, has populated the Earth. According to this historical information, the Old Ones crashed during the last interglacial period when modern man's predecessor was living in that region. The aliens, or their descendants, were living there when some type of cataclysm occurred, because it is recorded in their legends. Did the drastic event trigger the last advance of ice? D. Were they gentle people or warlike people? B. It's true they had weapons for hunting, but they were gentle. They didn't really have contact with other people because of their location. They were somewhat isolated. They were extremely psychic, so they had almost no need for speech. They had a very small vocabulary, because there was simply no need to develop it. D. What about the people on the ship? Were they psychic? B. Yes, they too were highly psychic, but since they were aliens it was, well, a different wavelength, so to speak. D. This is what Yuen meant about being out of harmony. B. Yes. Yet as they adjusted to living on the Earth, their psychic powers also adjusted to be in harmony with the Earth's energies, which made it easier for them to be in contact with the natives. At first it was very painful for both groups since they were sensitive and psychic. They both realized what the problem was, but they knew there was nothing that could be done about it to rush the process. Thus the natives basically left them alone, and the colony worked on adjusting to the planet and coming, survival, 181, D, B, D, B, D, B, into harmony. Since they were both basically gentle groups of people, the natives really didn't have that many problems with the clashes. There were a few misunderstandings but they were straightened up. The main problem was culture shock, which is to be expected. I wonder what the colony people thought when they landed and saw this type of human. They rejoiced to see this, for they knew if a human species had developed in the support of the planet, they had a greater chance to live. If one human type species could survive on a planet, that increased their chances of survival, because it meant that ecological niche already existed and they would just need to fit themselves into it. But the natives were so backward intellectually, by their standards. Well, they were backward technologically, but not intellectually or psychically. They were at that stage of technological development where they only had stone tools and such. But because of their psychic ability and being in harmony with the Earth, their religion and philosophy was as advanced as the colony's philosophy. In that way it made the contact easier. At first the younger members of the natives wanted to worship the colony as gods. But then they came to see the error of their ways, and understood that they were not gods but human creatures like themselves. It was just a matter of adjusting to them. And the natives helped the members of the colony to find which plants and animals were edible and which were not. I'm assuming that they eventually interbred, and that was how they were able to survive. Yes. Although they had begun to adjust to the planet, the scientists knew they would never be able to fully adjust to the radiation of the sun. And they did want to survive. They decided that the best way would be to interbreed with the natives, and therefore take on some of their stronger traits in regards to the tolerance for the sun. The natives were shorter and stockier than the colony people. They were what you would consider of normal height and build, but they were attractive. 182. The Legend of Stark Rush, people. And so if the young people of the colony wanted to be sexually interested in the natives, they were allowed and even encouraged to do so. Then the natives were not really repulsive to them. No, not at all. Different but not repulsive. It was just a matter of introducing them to more modern standards of hygiene. I wondered if the interbreeding might have been difficult for them, because it was something that they had to do in order to survive. It was not that difficult. They had to do it in order to survive in general, but it was left to each individual to make his own choice about the matter. Some did and some did not. Some of the colony members bred among themselves, and some interbred with the natives. But eventually after two or three generations everyone had some native blood in them. Naturally this changed their appearance, and it also helped their psychic abilities to adjust to the energy fields of Earth. I guess they were never as light-colored after that. No. For the natives had the typical Native American coloring, brown-skinned, blue-black hair, heavily lidded eyes. And the colony people were tall and slender. Their hair was blonde, their darkest hair was ash blonde. Light blue was also a common hair color, that was a surprise. It was kind of a pale, pastel type of blue. And their skin coloring was of a silvery type color. When they died it looked like a light gray. When they were alive, with the secretions of their skin and the energy of life, it looked silver. Not that it would shine particularly, but it looked silver in a general way. In direct light the oil on the skin would make it shimmer a little bit, but nothing flashy. Because the natives were bronze-colored, when they mated with the aliens their children would basically be of a lighter bronze color. It would still have the metallic type of tint to the color due to one parent being silvery-colored and the other one being bronze. There would not be a paler brown like what happened when the Native Americans bred with white people. With this, the bronze remained bronze, it was just a lighter bronze. Survival, D, then the silver color was drowned out right away. B, yes, it receded. It wasn't drowned out immediately, because for several generations one could tell who had descended from the aliens. Those who had some colony descent would be a lighter skin shade than the people who were strictly native descent. D. But the majority of aliens were blonde. Was there any white hair? B. Some. The colors ranged through ash blonde to light blonde to platinum blonde and pale blue. And various variations of that range, sometimes someone might be platinum blonde but with pale blue highlights. When they would be in direct light you would see pale blue glints in this platinum blonde hair. And other people would be directly pale blue so that, regardless of the light they were in, it was obvious it was pale blue. D. Those colors would have been genetically drowned out right away, I suppose. B. Yes indeed. The blue aspect of it took longer to be bred out because the natives had blue in their hair from it being so black. You've seen the color. It's black when you look at it. But when the sun shines on it just right you see blue highlights because it's so dark. Some of the first and second generations had interesting hair colors. Usually when an ash blonde would breed with a native, the hair would be red, not your spectrum red but the normal orange-red color or more of an auburn, a very pleasant color. And sometimes whenever someone with pale blue hair mated with a native the children tended to have bright blue hair. They found this very amusing. D. Laugh. Bright blue. B. Because the darkness of the native's hair would have darkened halfway between the two. But since both of them had blue highlights it would be intense blue instead of brown or something like that. D. Laugh, so that was the color that took the longest to disappear. B. Right. Usually if someone with bright blue hair mated with a native, it would come up with a dark color and you couldn't really decide if it was black or blue. But there were a lot of blue. 184. The Legend of Stark Rush, variations for two or three generations. The blonde characteristics spread out right away. Occasionally, particularly from the ones who had red hair, about one in four children would be born with a variation of blonde hair. But that particular branch of genetics with the red hair group tended to go towards brown and black since the black gene was so dominant. D. I suppose the eyes must have been different, too, for a while. B. Oh yes. The natives had deep dark or golden brown eyes. And the colony had violet A's. So the eyes would usually be violet or dark brown in the children.